Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have a very interesting show for you today. But before I go ahead and introduce today's guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone somewhere who's sleeping right now, or maybe they're working or watching television or doing something else, anything else, but watching the Roundtable Talk Show. It is your responsibility to go to those people and let them know the Roundtable Talk Show is live, because as always, I tell you, friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're introducing your friends to the Roundtable Talk Show, I'm going to go ahead and introduce today's first guest, Miss Allison Allman. And you definitely recognize Allison's name, her brand. You probably even know her social media by now. She joins us every Tuesday on the Roundtable Talk Show. Allison Allman is known as the organization maven. She helps busy, disorganized people in Southern California by organizing their homes, offices, and lives. She has been organizing for 20 years. Her method of dealing with root causes and purging excess items has transformed her clients' lives. Good morning, Allison. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm so excited. It's Tuesday. It's the best day of the week.
You changed it up, because last year, Monday was the best day of the week.
That's because I was there on Monday, and here I am on Tuesdays.
You are so funny. You're so cool. I love hanging out with you. Tell me, why do you enjoy, or why are you a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show every Tuesday?
I like the Roundtable because it's my form of networking, where especially last year when we were stuck at home so much during the pandemic, I just missed being out networking and talking to people. So when you launched the Roundtable, I was like, gosh, that's, you know, 3 to 5 new people I get to meet every week. And that kind of gets my fix for networking. And I've made so many great connections and so many purchases from other guests, like Sips Tea. And you got that mask last year that was all bejeweled, remember?
Yes, yes. I know, I know. But I digress. Tell us about you, who you are and what you do.
So I'm a home organizer here in Southern California. I help people that have clutter in their house that just usually there's an overwhelming feeling that they can't handle the anxiety associated to the clutter. So they procrastinate and avoid it. And then that avoidance turns from a pile into a bigger pile into, you know, people like to put their piles in bags and then move the bags into the closet and whatnot. And so then what happens is they can't do something in a certain part of the house because the clutter is out of control. And especially during the pandemic last year, where everyone switched, well, not everyone, but a large quantity of people switched to working from home and or distance learning from home. And then they realized that their clutter kind of like held them back from doing different things. Like they couldn't enjoy their dining room because it is now a distance learning area, or they couldn't enjoy the extra bedroom because they couldn't turn it into a gym. I especially was looking at SEO words and whatnot last year, and I noticed that there wasn't a lot of garage organizers. There was those garage makeover companies, like the ones that do the epoxy flooring and the cabinets and so forth. But there wasn't any home organizers that focused on organizing. So I thought to myself, gosh, I should switch to home organize to garage organizing. And then the other thing I noticed was people wanted to do conversions in their garage. Like they wanted to turn it into a home gym or distance learning. So I looked at that. And then the other thing is it's really COVID. I mean, it's pretty COVID safe, so to speak, in the sense that I keep my clients inside their house while I'm in their garage organizing. So I had to really get crafty last year. And so I really turned all my marketing dollars into garage organizing and talking about garage organizing and coming up with clever things to do in people's garages so I can continue garage organizing. So it really paid off this year. Even I've been so blessed to and privileged to organize so many garages each month. I went last year from only doing like maybe one every couple of months to now I do like six-ish a week. And there are six different garages. And so, and even now, still when I Google garage organizing, only I come up and all the makeover companies. So I'm just going to keep doing garages and just see where that takes me.
Well, that's
garage queen.
You are the garage queen. Well, let me ask you, you mentioned coming up with new ideas and I've watched your social media. You do social media well. How do you not get bored? How do you come up with such creative ideas day after day after day? New hashtags, new ideas.
A lot of it is just following the other, Instagram influencers. I have quite a few real estate influencers that I follow on social media. And they have private Facebook groups where they talk about like how TikTok is blowing up and how we need to do this with TikTok. And I don't do anything on TikTok. So I just, but I follow their advice and adapt it to Instagram or adapt it to things in my business. Another thing is they did an announcement recently that Instagram is not going to really like your TikTok video if you're using TikTok on Instagram. Instagram wants Instagram videos and reels, and they don't like that you're cross posting from other platforms. So what they're doing to discourage the cross posting is to basically bury your reel if it came from TikTok, and that came from the influencer group. So I went right away and told a couple people, but so they keep us in the loop on the changes, which really makes it easier to like adapt your business. They basically, Instagram wants you to upload video to the reels or the stories and it just not be from another platform. They want it to be just the original video. So it's a little bit more work on our end if you're using multiple platforms for social media, but at the same time, you don't want your stuff buried and not seen. So you have to kind of just bite the bullet and do it.
Absolutely. I am going to come back to you, Allison, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Charles Edge. Charles is the CTO of bootstrappers.mn and the CTO/COO of handrailers.com and a former director at JMF. He holds 35 years of experience as a developer, administrator, network architect, product manager, entrepreneur, and CTO. He is the author of 20 books and more than 6,000 blog posts on technology and has served as an editor and author for many publications. Good morning, Charles. How are you?
I'm great, especially after hearing you say all that wonderful stuff about me. Holy buckets, I sound great on paper.
You just sound great. You're amazing. Let's learn about you. I'm so impressed. 6,000 blog posts. How do you keep, creative? I would get bored after three posts. That's my biggest problem. I bore easily.
Yeah, it was really easy when I was a consultant and I would travel the world doing projects for people. And every day, effectively I was being paid to learn how to do things. So every day I'd just be like, what did I learn today? And post it. And that was 2002 about. So all these years later, it just, you don't even realize it's happening. Some of those posts are three paragraphs and some are three pages or, a chapter. And then sometimes you realize that you can take some of the content, put it in a more pedagogical or linear fashion and make an outline out of it and put it in a book and, years go by and you get more gray in your beard. And y'all have
make
to worry about
so
that.
Easy.
I know. Maybe it is. It's easier for some people, but that's how you get 20 books. Because I was wondering, 20 books. Wow, I'm impressed. So tell me, what are Bootstrappers?
Bootstrappers is a venture capital firm. So we deploy capital to young startups. And most of my days I spend listening to pitches from 5 to 10 people who want money. And in order to help them accelerate the growth of their companies.
Okay. So do you have any recommendations for people who are going out trying to bootstrap?
Yeah, I have thousands. I'm writing a whole book on it right now.
We don't have time for thousands, but I mean, one, two, three.
Yeah, I would say the first one is the best place to raise capital is from paying customers. It's, you know, anytime you raise capital from the venture capital community, you are diluting the equity of your company in exchange to accelerate the growth of that company. And so you can raise money without diluting the equity by selling product. And I think the example that Allison mentioned about, I wouldn't call it pivoting, but about seeing an opening just by, for example, combing through Google searches for the recent few weeks or months. That's a really awesome example of seeing an opening and raising capital from paying customers. And I love that story. I'll be telling that story later today, probably a couple times. So thank you.
Thank you. Allison, I'll let Allison respond, but I'm pretty sure Allison's like, don't forget the at or the organization made it. Like she wants that the organization made it included.
When you do the shout out on Instagram for the idea, tag me.
And that, I think that's a great example of one thing that I tell a lot of, because I work with mostly startup, technology startups. And one thing I try to hammer home is do less and do what you do better. And so going from I'll organize your life to I'll organize your garage and then you'll want me to organize your life as an example is kind of a wonderful, I don't want to call it a hero's journey because you never had the hard time in that, but it's a wonderful story.
Oh yeah, I've had the hard time in that.
We can talk about the hard time. I want to go ahead and introduce my next guest, Miss Tarina Nicole Hill. Tarina is the designer and founder of Gypsy Leather Goods. The New Jersey native creates beautiful, bold statement pieces for art and design lovers who enjoy expressing their individuality. She also co-founded DIY Makers Con, a conference for women DIYers with her business partner, Nika Saran, and founded the Fashion Design Center of South Jersey. Good morning, Tarina. How are you?
Good morning. You know, I'm just so happy to be here. And a lot of what your two guests have already said really resonated with me a lot.
Wow. Tell us what resonated with you. Tell us about yourself.
You know what? Okay. So I've been designing leather accessories since college, since before I graduated the Fashion Institute of Technology. I have a degree in accessory design, and then I went on to design accessories for a lot of corporate brands in New York City. But then I went on and discovered that I love teaching. In 2008, where everyone was being laid off, I was one of those. I was working designing handbags and footwear for Capelli New York and their corporate office in New York City. And I walked in on Monday to a pink slip with the whole technical department. We were all being let go. And prior to that though, I had been an entrepreneur. I had opened a vintage boutique back in 2001. And so during that time, I also discovered that designing handbags was a passion of mine. I mean, I was in school for it. I was in school for fashion design, but I really honed in on designing handbags. And so my line got picked up into a lot of different boutiques around the country. And I was featured in a few magazines, but being, you know, running a boutique, being a full-time college student and trying to get this startup as a handbag designer off the ground was a lot to juggle. So I just did the regular thing, finished school and went into corporate America. But when I was laid off, for no fault of my own. And by this time I was a mom, I was a wife. I just felt like it was just unfair, you know, to put so much power in the hands of others, you know, to determine. And I was going through a divorce actually at the time. And so I had a toddler, she's now 16, but she was 3 at the time. And I just felt like I could not give that power to anyone anymore. I'm going to go to work every day. I'm going to sacrifice. I'm going to put all this money in childcare. I'm going to have a part-time nanny. I'm going to make sure I'm on the train on time to get into the city. And then to be laid off right after I just had a review being told that I was like such a superstar, You know, I'm just like, no, you cannot have that type of power over my life because I have bills, I have a kid to feed, you know? And so I relaunched my line of handbags at that point. And that was 2008, it's now 2021, I'm still running it. But I did pivot. So two things happened during that time. I discovered that teaching was something that I could get paid very well for. And so although I could not find another corporate design for a while back in the industry, I was able immediately to use my skill as a fashion designer to teach fashion design at after school programs, summer camps, museums that had, you know, teen programming. Colleges were hiring me. I actually went on and got my master's so that I had the option of becoming a professor. And so teaching became something that A, I did not expect to do, but B, it paid really well. And it gave me that joy of making something that is so mysterious or exclusive, like, you know, how to get into the fashion industry. Just, you know, plain and simple for those who may not necessarily have had the opportunity to study design and school and develop a portfolio to get into a highly esteemed, you know, program like FIT. I wanted to give just regular kids from around the way the opportunity to, you know, explore their creativity and have a creative, you know, degree if possible, if they wanted to go to college or something like this. So anyway, pivoting back in 2008 has now led me to where I am now, where I opened, during the pandemic, I opened the Fashion Design Center of South Jersey after teaching fashion design all over up and down the East Coast from Moore College of Art in Philadelphia up to the Brooklyn Children's Museum in Brooklyn. Now I have my own center where I teach fashion design. And so that was one pivot. Also, now that everyone's home all day long, well, not everyone, but a good majority of us, people are more interested in what their home looks like instead of what they're wearing. And so I've also pivoted from designing accessories to designing home decor and spaces. So I do a lot of interior design, home staging, and designing home decor pieces.
Wow, interesting. You have that your spiel down pat. You answered all of my questions. I was going to ask, when you mentioned the pink slip, I was going to go back to the layoff. Then you went back to the layoff. And I'm like, wow, I'm like taking this whole journey with you in about 5 minutes. It was kind of cool. It was impressive. Charles, is that what you typically hear where somebody gives you their life in a nutshell, their story of how they got where they are?
No. Although I do like to start, we have three podcasts that we're running out of my basement, basically. And I like to start each episode with your origin story, you know? So that was about as perfect and flawless and well-spoken an origin story as I've heard yet.
Oh, wow. Thanks, guys. You got me blushing.
No, you answered all the questions. I want to go back to the purses though. You still have your own purse line, correct? Now,
yeah, Gypsy Leather Goods is a line of leather, eco-friendly leather accessories. So basically, I upcycle leather trench coats and leather pants, leather skirts, leather garments that have been sent to the Goodwill, sent to thrift stores. At this point in my career, I've been doing it for so long that people are shipping me their old coats from the 70s and 80s, coats that have been sitting in their closets for decades. And I upcycle those into custom handbags, home decor, and the small pieces of leather so that I have a waste-free design studio become leather jewelry.
Well, I've never even heard that phrase, upcycle. Allison, you know
about that? Yeah, I know about upcycle, no problem, but not to the point that you remake it that way. I was like, what?
I've been on HGTV's flea market flip because I upcycle furniture as well. So it's, when I say home decor, it's not just throw pillows, it's you know, seating and different accessories for the home.
And so you just see a piece out in the world and you say, I can do amazing things with that.
Literally. literally, that's exactly what happens. I'll be driving down the street and someone would put out a chair and I'm like, that thing will be an amazing like throne. Like I can already see it painted a different color. I see this, the upholstery job that I'm going to do to it. I already see everything, you know, while it's sitting on the curb, I can already see it in its new condition. You wow. know, it's one of those things that you don't realize is a gift until you realize that when you're trying to explain things to people, they're just like, I don't get it. You know, so I do a lot of stuff.
But that's what makes you a visionary. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I had to learn about being able to see certain things. I could see the full picture, but nobody else could see it. I had to get away from that need to have everyone see what I see and just focus on the vision that I was given.
Get it done. Yeah, absolutely.
What, tell us about your students that you were being enrolling. What are you looking for?
Yeah, so at the Fashion Design Center of South Jersey, it's really a makerspace. And so as a makerspace, my vision is that people who are interested in design can come and use the studio space. I have cutting tables, I have a row of sewing machines, I have all the tools and supplies that you need. So if you are living in a place in you know, the surrounding towns and you're apartment may be too small for your design studio, you can come and use my studio and pay for it by the day, pay for it by the hour, have a membership, that type of thing, or you can take classes, or both. But the classes I have, because I've been doing this for over 25 years, I have a large Rolodex of friends who teach everything from metalsmithing to lingerie design to shoemaking and to textile design. So they all come in and they teach different workshops based on their specialty. And so I just provide the space, the opportunity. There are things that I teach personally, but it's not all about me. You know, it's for me, it's a community.
I like that.
I've been going to a lot of maker spaces over the years, and being in more of the computing world, I would say the ones that I go to are dusty and dingy and full of electronics and robotics parts, and yours sounds quite lovely.
Thank you. Yeah, no, this is, it has a lot of natural sunlight and lots of color of all the different textiles and trim. No, it's a beautiful space. I'm really happy there. One thing though, it was recently flooded. So that sucks. So the building is being renovated. And mind you, it's a brand new building. It was just renovated. It hadn't been used for over 25 years. And so the complete building was renovated and we opened up, was open for about 6-7 months before we flooded. And the flooding came from the sewer. So oh, wow. The entire building has to be rebuilt, the floors, the walls, the ceilings. And so temporarily I'm at a local high school, but it just so happened that the high school contracted me to provide the fashion design certification for their juniors and seniors, but they were going to be bused to me at my space. And so when this happened, the principal allowed me to use a classroom there. And so, I have a new home temporarily.
I'm not gonna give everyone vertigo by flipping my computer around to show you what's happening in my front yard, but my entire front yard is currently dug up. And in Minneapolis, which is where I'm based, it's currently about -5 with a 10 degree wind chill on top of that. So maybe -15. Yikes. And there is a crew out in my front yard digging up all my sewage pipes. So I put a sensor in my, you know, right by where the basement would flood if the sewage came up, because I've had that happen in houses before. And the sensor tripped and I get a text on my phone and I'm like, what? And I go down there and I just bought this house in the last 6 months. And I go down there and I see the water starting to rise.
Oh,
and luckily we caught it in time. We shut off all the water in the house. So no damage inside the house.
But
we'll be replanting all the grass and lots of money later. You know?
I mean, I won't complain because, you know, it could have been worse. None of my supplies, machines, fabric, none of that was ruined, but the floors were completely damaged. And I mean, because it's sewage, you got to get rid of them. You know, you just got to, you know, put down new floors, put down new everything. Yeah.
But and that's just another chapter in your journey, your path.
Exactly.
Charles, you were going to say something?
Yeah, whether water's coming in from above in a leak and going through all the things and staining all the things, or whether it's coming from below and full of sewage, water is the most destructive force in homes. It is, it is insane.
I'm on the main level. I'm on the ground floor level, and there's a whole, there are classrooms underneath me. There's a dance studio, there's a co-work space. And so the flooding came from our level, because our level is where the bathrooms are. And so it rained down onto the lower level. So that their ceiling is ruined, all their floors are ruined. It's just a catastrophe. So it's frustrating because, you know, when you open in a building that hadn't been open for so many years, for decades, we had so many permits, and, you know, just getting the occupancy certificate took about 8 months, and then we went into COVID. So it was like, you know, I've been waiting for a year and a half just to open.
How do you keep going? How do you not just give up?
Well, for me, I run other businesses. You know, and so while I was waiting for the fact, that was all the Fashion Design Center, South Jersey. But I also have Gypsy Leather Goods, you know, and so that's run out of my house. I have a design studio in my home, you know, so I wasn't affected on that end. And I, you know, like I said, I have a toddler. So I was carrying a baby 2 years ago, you know, he's two now. And so just being so busy with a brand new baby after, you know, my kids are 14 years apart. So starting all over with a new child kept me really busy and motivated, you know, because with my 16-year-old daughter, I was a stay-at-home mom. I was able to homeschool her up until, you know, a certain age. And I wanted to always have that option. I feel like if you give up, you got to get a job then, right? You still got to eat, you still got to pay your bills. And so then someone else controls your time. Someone else controls who and how your children are educated, you know? And I just, again, I can never give that power to anyone anymore. So at least I know that if I keep going, I keep my options open. I can be home with my kid.
Absolutely. I'm sure you can relate to that, Allison.
Yeah, when my kid was younger, I wanted to be home with her. Now that she's 13 and ignores me as well, there's no reason for me to stay home. I used to take her over to a friend's house on Saturday. She still goes to a friend's house on Saturday. And I used to sit at home waiting for her because I would take the weekends off to be with her. And then I'd be like, so are you done playing with your friend? I'd be texting her and she'd be like, no, I want to be here a couple hours longer. And I'm like, a couple hours longer? I'm at home waiting for you. And then she's like, and so then after like two Saturdays of that, I was like, I'm going to start working on Saturdays. So I do. I plan the Saturdays. So I work every Saturday as a result. But it's funny because I drop her off at a friend's house like 9:30 in the morning. And like this last Saturday, I dropped her off at like 9:15 and I picked her up at 9 p.m. And I'm like, did you get your fill with your friend? Because you were with her for 12 hours and we're not doing anything tomorrow for Sunday. She's like, yeah, I was really surprised you didn't finish early. I'm like, yeah, the project I'm on is not a finish early job. So we'll just be working on it for a month. But she's like, yeah, I really enjoyed all that time I was with my friend. I'm like, yeah, I know.
Kids are like that.
Yeah. But mine is almost 16. So now I am dealing with the opposite because she's been ignoring me for the last few years. And now it's like I'm trying to like smother her with as much time as possible because she's off to college in a year, you know? And so I'm just trying to get all that face time.
Yeah, I'm like, you haven't seen ignored yet. My kids are 23 and 26. You know, my 26-year-old lives in St. Louis. Like, she's the expert at ignoring her mom. I call her, text her, like, you're going to call your mom? You're going to text your mom? She's living her life. She's happy, though. Charles, your parent, you got some kids, some rugrats?
Yep, a 12-year-old who is in the same boat of I'd rather be with my friends, and I'm just sitting here with the Nerf gun by myself and the Legos. Like, what happened to that?
That's why I say, hold on to it.
No, do what I did, everyone, and start all over. Have a whole
No.
I think you're that older. Ship sailed. There's no, that doesn't exist for me anymore.
No, as they get older, like I love when my kids were small, you can pick them up and you can put them in the car and you just go, you know, as they get older, it's like, they want to discuss where we're going. Like, mom, I don't want to go like this. Just get in the car. You know, as they get older, it's more of a negotiation than just going where you want to go.
Right.
Yep. That happens with me where I have errands to do because I work so many hours for my clients. So all my stuff kind of gets pushed to the wayside. So sometimes on Saturdays, I'll have to errands to do after a client. And so one time my kid goes, do your errands on your own time, mom. When you put me in the car, I don't want to sit in the car and do errands with you. And I'm like, yeah, I got like no time to do errands. When I work like 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., I can't do it Monday through Friday. So it falls on a weekend to do the endless stupid little errands. And so she's like, yeah, do it on your own time. I don't want to sit in the car while you're doing all these little errands. And I'm like, well, you can come in. And she goes, well, no, because then I can't listen to the radio when if I go inside. And I'm like, you come inside with me, I'm more likely to buy you a little candy or a little snack or something like this. So you might as well just come in with me, like, because every time I go to the mall, I always stop at, you know, a candy place or a drink place or something as I'm in the mall. And so I'm like, so you just should come with me because I'll just buy these little things for you. And she goes, oh, you do that while you're inside the mall? I'm like, yeah, I've been doing that since you were born, before you were born. That's the whole point of going to the mall to do a return, is I know I can go buy Godiva or go buy See's Candy or go buy a necklace or, you know, or something. And so when you just sit in the car the whole time, you're missing out. And so then now she's like, is she gonna go to the mall today? I'm like, I think so. Like, I guess I could return something, you know? And then she's like, okay, good, because I want to go to Godiva store. And I'm like, oh.
It's the bribing.
Yes. And being parents and being busy. Charles, you have 20 books. I know people who have taken 20 years and haven't written their first book. How do you do it? How did you get your start?
So I was working in Los Angeles, and I had a deep background with Unix, which is an older operating system that the Mac operating system was based on, when the Mac operating system moved to Unix. And so there was this generational change that was occurring with people who had been in the Apple community for years. And I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And someone said, do you wanna, at that point I'd written a few blog posts and someone saw them and said, do you wanna do a book on the Mac? And I was like, sure, that sounds fun. And about a year later, that book went to press. And about a year and a half later, another one. And about a year later, another one. And it's been a steady stream of one year I did three books, and that was way too much to try to do at one time. But it's been a pretty steady stream. I write, you know, 3-4 pages at a time. Right now I'm writing what's probably an overly ambitious book on the history of computers. So going from the technical space to more history, which has been amazing. You get to interview people like the people who invented the spreadsheet. Can you imagine life without spreadsheets?
Oh, wait, no. Look. You might already have this person. And I don't even know if they still are alive. The person that I'm just so grateful for is the person who invented copy-paste. Like, that's who I want to be.
He passed away. Yeah, he passed away this year. Larry Tesler.
Oh, I was too late.
I did get to interview him before he passed for the book. He not only did he invent that, he invented the concept of the WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get on a screen.
Yes.
And
yes.
Before him, there was a word processing apps had different modes. So you would use a key combination if you wanted to edit a document, as opposed to or insert text into a place in a document. It wasn't you click and you point to do those things. He was a great innovator. They invented most of that stuff at Xerox PARC in Palo Alto. So,
Oh, wow. No, I
yeah.
always said that I would love to meet that person because, just think about how often we copy and paste these
All day
days. I do it
long.
all the time. All my posts to all my social media, I'll make one post, edit it, make sure it's the way I want it, and then I'll just copy paste, copy paste, copy paste to all my other social media. Like, if I had to actually type this, oh no, I would not be able to do it. That is incredible. I have to read that book.
Well,
Yes. I
If I ever
remember in the
finish.
90s, we had that
Yeah.
typewriter that was like that you could write a whole bunch and edit, and then you hit enter and it would type everything. We had one of those in the 90s, and it wasn't a computer. It was a typewriter, word processor typewriter, or something like that. And it had cute little characters long before we had emoticons and all that kind of stuff. It had wingdings, I think is what they were called. And so I would sit and do all kinds of flyers and stuff and borders. I was a little nerdy that way, but that was in the 90s.
That's
It
a
was like
surprise.
like 1991. So that was right when that square Mac came out that had the screen in the you know this, Charles. I don't know what it was called, but
Yeah,
I
the
learned.
original Macintosh 128K came out in about 84, but it took a long time, I think, for that whole GUI concept to start filtering out through the world and to go mainstream. Before that, there were computers by Atari and Commodore and Apple, with the Apple II. But yeah, that was I remember typing up my dad's song lyrics on an original Mac, and this would probably be around the same time, like 1990, 1991, and printing them. And I brought them home, and my dad saw lyrics that he'd written printed, and he was like, "Wow, these computer things are a thing." And all these years later, I've started companies and sold them, and it's always been computers. So,
Wow. It just shows how much technology has changed over the years. But for me, it's part of my journey because I built my first website in 1994. And I did that only because I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. There wasn't some, I want to be the next Oprah. I want to be this. I want to be a senator. No, I just wanted to be a stay-at-home mom because I wanted to see my kids take their first steps and say their first
100%.
words. Yes. And I knew even then the internet was the only way that I'd be able to do that and earn a living. And back then, people said I was lazy because they figure if you do not leave the house, if you do not have a 9 to 5, but technology has changed. Our printers were huge. You talk about Xerox, I'm sure you know, Charles.
The miniaturization. I mean, we have these arms, these microchips that are just so tiny with, 8 billion transistors in them, as opposed to hundreds of transistors or maybe thousands that took up an entire floor of a university in, 1951 or 1952. So the increased miniaturization and power in these things. And there are certain things like, our phones now, the Snapdragons and the Apple ARM chips, they have machine learning built into the chip. And I feel like we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of what those kind of technologies are really going to do once all the app developers start unlocking secrets. And people just come up all the time with a new idea. Anytime you have to go see a person during a pandemic, as an example, I think, startup entrepreneurs are sitting there saying, "Why did I have to leave the house to do that?" And
Yes.
a new business is born that could be the next Google, So it's an exciting time, I think. I think in hundreds of years, people will be like, "What was life like during the Great Transition?" And they'll watch podcasts like yours and say, "Wow, that's what life was like during that transition."
I totally relate to that, Sharifa, because I feel like the world is just catching up. Where entrepreneurship is a real option. I mean, when I started my first business, well, first it was the boutique in 2001, but even back then, people were looking at me like I had, horns out of coming out of my head. Like, why would you not want to go to a job and get a paycheck? Why would you want to be self-employed? That freedom of time is something that I don't know why that's such a difficult concept for people. Like, I love having control over my time, period. Like, yes. It's not a hard concept, you know? but beyond that, I had, when I was at FIT, I guess I'm a serial entrepreneur. I need to just own that. But at the moment, I started a line of skincare. And mm-hmm. so growing up, I always went to the South, to South Carolina, and my grandparents had their own farm, and they had this red clay, you know, and I used to add like lemon juice and essential oils and make my own face mask. And when I was trying to decide, what am I going to do? Because I, by this time I was married, I was pregnant, and I was graduating college all at the same time. And, and I knew that my mom was a stay-at-home mom, you know, so I knew that I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. Like, that was never a question for me. And trying to decide whether or not I was going to go ahead with my handbags or if I was going to do something totally new and launch a skincare brand. And that's what I did. It was called In a Glow Home Spa Products. I had a website. I sold wholesale. I got into about 30 boutiques and spas around the country, including one in Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, wow. And
I did that until my daughter was about 3. And then I decided, I want to sell this business and really go ahead with my handbag. But then, of course, like I said, I was going through divorce, wound up going back into corporate America. Then I was laid off, and then I started the handbag line again. But what I come to realize, just talking to people at dinner parties and things like that, when I was running Integral Home Spa Products, telling people, and this was back from 2004 to about 2007, it was my time running Integral. And telling people what I did, there were some people who were, of course, very excited about, you know, me running a home-based business, and others were just like laughing, like thought it was ridiculous, you know? And and so to now be, I don't know, about 20 years later, and some of those people have launched their own businesses from home, you know, I kind of just sit back with that.
Mm-hmm. I tried to tell you.
Where were you? Like, why are you so late, you know, to the party? But it's whatever. Now, I mean, I have nieces and nephews and children in my family who run their own home-based businesses. It's like, it's the way of the world now. And my ambition, again, was always just to be a stay-at-home mom and doing what I love to do, doing what I do well. But now I feel like that ambition isn't big enough. Now, you know, my ambition needs to be to become a very successful multimillionaire so that when I'm looking at my retirement years, I can still kick back and relax. You know, I never want to ever have to feel forced to work for someone other than myself.
I agree. Was that part of your journey, Allison?
Oh, I just wanted to say about where people looked at you, you know, strange and laughed at you and everything. So I still run into it to this day where people in my family and my ex-husband feel that my home organizing business, they just can't understand why I'm so busy because they right away think that it's very silly that anyone would pay to be organized or to clean out their garage and so forth. It happened recently where my dad called me on a Saturday and there's a family member that's sick in our family. So I thought it was the call, like he was going to let me know this person passed away. So because normally I don't take calls when I'm working because out of respect of my clients. So anyways, I take the call and he goes, "What are you doing?" And I go, "Oh, I'm organizing a garage." And he just starts laughing. He's an 82-year-old man and he just starts laughing. And I go, "Can I help you? Like, why'd you call?" Get to the point. And he goes, "Oh, I just wanted to see if you needed some canned goods because I know that you're self-employed and I know that you need canned goods." And I go, "No, I shop at Trader Joe's all the time and I probably spend too much money there, but we have tons of food. We're good." And he goes, "Oh, okay. So you don't want these canned goods from so-and-so because she's in the hospital in a coma and so she can't eat the food." And I go, "Yeah, nope, just donate it, Dad. Like, I don't need it. You don't need to worry about me." And so then he goes, "Well, what about in a couple of weeks when you don't have work? Aren't you going to need the canned goods? And I'm like, no, Dad, I'm good. Again, there's a Trader Joe's right down the street. Like, I'm going to, if I need food, I'm just going to go to Trader Joe's. Like, I'm just, that's just what I'm going to do. And so then he goes, so you're really busy cleaning out people's garages. And I go, well, the clean out is part of the process. It isn't like I just go there and empty their garage and then say, okay, you're done. You know, I organize and purge and come up with a plan and all this kind of stuff. And so he goes, so then he starts laughing again. And I'm like, so can we talk later, Dad? Because I'm like right in the middle of like organizing the paint right now. Like I'm determining if what paint is old and what one they need to keep and so forth. And he just keeps chuckling and hangs up. And I'm just like, really, Dad? Like, really? And so another time it's come up too. And so to stop the family members in their track, I go, do you guys think that I get paid a Monopoly money? Cause you guys all don't take me seriously that I do this for a living every day. Do you just think my clients open up their Monopoly game and hand me hundreds of fake dollars? Because you always act like this isn't a real business, yet somehow my bills are paid every time and everything. So, I mean, do you just think that people give me fake money and I just take that to the bank and they turn it into real money? Like, how do you think this works with my fake company? And then they just, like, stopped, and it stopped all the chatter for at least a couple of weeks. You know, that was a couple of weeks ago. But I just so tired of it.
So where do you find supportive people then?
The Round Table Talk Show with Sharifa Hardy.
Good answer. I love that. But Charles, you have three podcasts, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
And right. Podcasting is one of those things that in 2021, everybody wants to be a podcaster. Everybody, you know, takes it serious. You have so many celebrities who are doing their own podcast. But years ago, it would be like, oh, that's on the internet. You know, it wasn't taken as serious. Did you find that to be true?
I had already written a number of books before I launched the first podcast, which I had been listening. A friend of mine is a part-time announcer for the Washington Senators baseball team, and I had been listening to him, and he's also in the Apple space, and I was like, you know, I need a co-host. I don't have a great voice for podcasting, so do you want to join and do this together? And he was like, yeah. So we started that one years ago. We just recorded, I think, episode 206. So 206 episodes later, and we do about one a week. And then about a year in, we got asked about sponsoring. And we were like, how much? What is this sponsor that you... And so that's been a, you know, it went from being a liability on my balance sheet, according to the IRS, or a hobby, to being... you know, its own business. And that was wonderful. And then the second one, I was working at a company and I was running the research department, and we decided to start kind of a company podcast promoting the people within the company, because I kept feeling like the company was becoming less and less about the people from the outside looking in and more this company. And so I wanted to tell the stories of the people who did all these things that no one even knew happened. And that turned out pretty well. It's got just as many listeners. And then when I started working on the history book, I decided to do one with very short, like 10, 15 minute episodes, although some hit 30 or 40 minutes, on the history of computers. So
awesome. What do you think is one of the most surprising things about the history of computers?
How much I have wrong about history. And I would say it's not just the history of computers, it's all history. You know, whether it's every aspect. Growing up in the South, as an example, I got a very different rendition of history than I think if I'd have grown up in Los Angeles or New York today. Especially back in, you know, the 1920s or whenever I was young. I can't remember.
During the Prohibition.
Yep. But I think these days, there's just so much information out there. And when you go to the source, like you mentioned the copy paste, when you talk to Larry Tesler about what things were like at that moment in time, and you start to realize, well, you know, the history books or the articles seem, the Wikipedia pages seem to say this is what happened. But then when you go to the source, and sometimes you have two people you're talking to and you get different stories and they were there in the room together at the exact same time.
Wow. You know? So how did Larry Tesler come up with copy and paste? Because it would seem to me, not to judge anybody, but for me, if I were to create it, it's because I was lazy. Like, that's too much work. I need to do something a lot faster. But did he tell you why he came up with it?
Yeah, they were building the first word processor. And in the process of building the first word processors, I guess, because there were two or three projects going on at Park, it was deterministic, I think, in his mind. It was like, well, if I didn't do it, someone would have done it. There was nothing special about it. It was obvious that you needed that. You know, you're looking at a block of text and you want it in two different documents, or you want to move it inside the document. You know, duh. And it seemed somewhat humble in a way, but also somewhat like, oh, okay. But you did do it first.
So. Yeah, that is genius. He changed my life. Years later, made my life easier. I wouldn't be able to do what I do without him. I gotta create a tribute to him. Now that I know his name, Larry Tesler. I like that. Now, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Tarina.
Okay. Speaking of podcasts, I have launched a podcast during this quarantine. Actually, it launched right before the quarantine, called The Fashion, Business, and Career Show. It's now available everywhere, Apple, Spotify, everywhere. And what I do is interview fashion professionals from all aspects of the fashion industry, because most people think to be a fashion professional means you have to be a designer. But I interview stylists, interview boutique owners. Coming up this week, I have a woman named Corinne Wright, who does all the styling for the America Has Talent show. And she does the tailoring behind the scenes for the Grammys and things like that. So there's so many different walks of career choices available. And so I tried to interview someone who's done something that most people haven't considered when they are deciding whether or not they're going to earn a degree in design. My focus has always been on fashion design education. You know, I want people to know they have, if this is something they want to do, there's a job for them, you know, whether it's working for another company or working for themselves. I want people to obviously tune into the Fashion, Business, and Career Show. I'm in my third season, so that's really exciting. If they are interested in learning more about Gypsy Leather Goods, my website is TerinaNicole.com, TerinaNicole.com. And you can find me on Instagram at TerinaNicole. What else is there? I have been doing a lot of teaching for independent artists and designers who want to turn a hobby into a stream of income, whether it's a business or a side hustle, how to go from hobby status to an official business, whether it's going to be an LLC or a sole proprietorship, and to, you know, start making money off of something that they love to do creatively. And you can learn those type of things at my website as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, Tarina. Allison, what do you have for us?
Well, thanks for having me on the show.
I almost said my show. Did you just say thanks for having me on my show?
My show, yep.
Love me some Allison Allman. The organization made it. Yes, this is our show, girl.
And I just want to continue helping people with their clutter and just being a part of this. And so people can reach me through the organization Maven. If they Google it, all my social media outlets pop up. Or they're welcome to go to my website at AllisonAllman.com. And yeah, I just love having the privilege of transforming people's homes and their lives and helping them. And
do you do it virtually as well? If people are like in New Jersey, could you do a virtual or no?
Not particularly. There's a long story behind it. But I am considering if there's enough need for me to go out somewhere, that I would go somewhere for like a week out of a month and just pre-book it. So there's actually a book coming out pretty soon. And so there's all these other things happening that I can't really talk about yet.
Okay. Yeah, but whenever you come on the show and you say, I can't really talk about it, then you come back months later and then you talk about it. You were just on television. Was it CBS?
Yes, CBS 2. And yeah, I couldn't talk about that one forever. But then when I could talk about it, we talked about it every week.
We'll talk about it. People can still watch it.
Oh. Yes, they can watch it on the replay on Amazon Prime Video through Destination LA is the name of the show. And I'm on episode 3, which is $1.99. And I'm on that show.
Fantastic. Thank you, Allison. Charles, what do you have for us?
I feel like just to pick up where Allison left off when we were talking about finding someone supportive, I love all the conversation about the entrepreneurship journey that we've kind of been having. And I would say finding those people who you can lean on, but also who will give you honest feedback about whether, because not all of our ideas are good ideas. Some are great and some really suck. And so finding someone who will be supportive, but also be like, no, the world doesn't need that. You know, I think that's the one thing that I would leave with, you know.
Okay, we will take that, Charles. But if people want to contact you or get one of your 20 books, where can they find it?
Oh, Amazon.com, search for Charles Edge. Amazon has an Author Central, or my personal website, Kryptid.com, KRYPTED.com.
What is Krypta?
Kryptid is a play on encrypted. I was cryptid on the message boards back in the 80s, you know, all the way up to today. So it's just been my handle since the beginning of time, practically.
That sounds like a whole nother story we gonna save for another day. But I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of The Roundtable.
Fun.
You are so welcome. And I want to thank everyone who tuned in. Watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show does not mean you're not important. It doesn't mean we still don't need your support, because we do. We appreciate you watching the show. We appreciate you sharing the show. But as always, please support our guests. Visit our guests. Their website link is in the Facebook post. Follow them on social media. Reach out to them. Send them a message. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Thanks.